We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
You're listening to From the Chair, and I'm your host, Mike Hamilton. Join us each episode as we talk to athletic directors from across America. We're going to talk about topics like leadership, career development, issues of the day, and I can promise you we're going to have some fun along the way too. So sit back, listen in, and let's dive in. Let's go.
I am really excited about today's episode. I get to spend some time with my longtime friend, Julie Cromer, who's the athletic director at Ohio University. Julie, welcome in today.
Thank you, Mike, and thank you, my friend. It's great to have the opportunity to catch up with you.
You know, I was thinking about earlier this morning, prior to our jumping on, I became athletic director at University of Tennessee in 2003, which is now almost 20 years ago. And you, I think, you were already at the NCAA at the time, if I remember correctly. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. So very early on, when I was asked to serve on a committee, I think it was the NCAA Personnel and Recruiting Cabinet, the names that we work our way through, you were our right-hand person with the staff and just blown away from right out of the gate with your knowledge of and your ability to organize and keep us on task. And so a long time that we've known each other. And so I do appreciate you spending some time today. And we're going to talk a little bit about your time at the NCAA and then the interface of or the opportunity that you've had now to move on campus over these last several years and kind of talk about the differences and the similarities and the things you've learned. And so if you would, I'm going to just jump right into that first. Is that okay?
Sure. Let me also just say thank you for the kind compliments before we get into it. And it was quite brave of you as an AD to jump into a committee with, you know, that kind of inviting title and subject matter. And I particularly appreciate it now from the AD chair, understanding much more than I did in 2003, all the things that are coming at you. So thanks for your service all those years ago. And I'm really happy to have started our friendship that way and to continue it today.
No doubt. Well, I've talked to Shane Lyons recently, and we were talking about the fact he was on that same committee. We're bemoaning the fact that I think we spent an hour and a half one day talking about the size and structure of recruiting note cards and whether or not they could be color or black and white or front or back and, you know, all the critical things that we were addressing at that time. So I learned a ton, as you would imagine. So, hey, so here's the thing. You know, you did spend a long time at the NCAA and you were in a leadership role. And certainly you've been out on campus now for some time in leadership role in Indiana and Arkansas and now as athletic director at Ohio University. And I think you've got a unique perspective to be able to sort of juxtapose those two things together And to me, Julie, there are some gaps there, right? Just as I'm learning in the multimedia rights business, what I thought the multimedia rights business was as an athletic director and what I see the multimedia rights business being in the role I'm in now, and vice versa, there are gaps. And so in your two significant roles, I am certain that you've seen the gaps in communication and understanding and those kind of things. And I think the audience would benefit from your view of that now that you sat in those two different places.
Well, like you, I see it very differently now than I did as a staff member. And I would have been a much better staff member to the membership if I had had some of these experiences at the time. I think the other thing that is layered on all of this, and maybe it's true also in your transition, Mike, is just the rate of acceleration has picked up so dramatically over the last 10 years, even since, or 11 now, since I left the NCAA National Office. And so our ability to get to information, the speed of communication, the acceleration of issues, how they come up, how they are resolved, whether it's in a positive fashion or not, you know, all of the speed is so much faster now. And I think, you know, I was just on a committee call yesterday, actually, and was reflecting on that because I knew you wanted to talk about this generally. And, you know, we spent a good deal of our time talking about how the issues that are really important issues are issues that made headlines this spring that we're now trying to respond to, how they would be broken up and distributed through the governance process, who would deal with what, how many other different groups would weigh in, where the decisions or the recommendations would come back and circle back through. And so, you know, we had a couple of hours maybe together on this video conference, and through nobody's fault, we spent a significant proportion of that time just talking about how to navigate structure. And so when you think about how everybody's time is valuable, how quickly these things are evolving, wouldn't it be great if we could have spent, you know, 5% of that time on navigation and 95% on that time on solutions and ideas and concepts and getting to the work? So it was a productive video conference, but to have to spend that much time to decide who gets to talk about which part of this and who else they're going to engage and how it's going to return, and then factoring in a timeline for all of that to happen, to me is just, you know, a great example of why the structure is has become so big and so multi-layered and really doesn't fit the true environment in which we're trying to lead and manage on any topic, let alone some of the really big ones that have come up this summer.
Yeah. So, you know, I think communication is critical, right? And we say, in the context of the NCAA, we say we are the NCAA. The institutions are the NCAA. And while that is a true statement, it's also a complex statement, right? Because you are primarily concerned with the day-to-day activities there in Athens with your student athletes and your coaches and your fans and all the things that you have to be concerned about. And you know, the NCAA umbrella is overarching across all of that. Likewise, the staff is in Indianapolis, and they're churning through their work, and they're not on campus every day. And so if there's something you could go back to your time in the NCAA and say, well, I really wish I had known this about what it meant from the campus perspective, and maybe even vice versa, maybe dive in on that a little bit more if you would.
Sure. Well, I would have told you back in 2003 that I spent a lot of time engaged with the membership. And relative to my peers at the national office, I think that was true because I happened to have a role that called for a lot of that. I worked with a lot of committees. I worked with a lot of groups, coaches groups, faculty groups. I worked in a program that doesn't even exist anymore, but it was athletic certification. And we literally went out onto campuses and spent, you know, 4 or 5 days meeting everyone and talking about what was going on campus and how it, you know, did or didn't meet this accreditation program that used to exist. So I would have told you back then that I had a pretty good pulse on what was going on in the membership. And it took me about 3 months in Indiana, which was my first stop leaving the national office, to realize that I was so wrong. And it wasn't that I wasn't well-intentioned. I was. It wasn't that I didn't listen, because I did. It was just simply that until you are in it in that way, embedded in it, It's very difficult to understand and put that at the forefront of a national policymaking group. And so there inherently are gaps that are going to occur. So if I could go back now, what I would do is try to help others understand that the filter system used in a national policy organization to determine the issues that are most important or most pressing needs to be much more reflective of the boots on the ground experience, be that of our student athletes, our coaches, or administrators. A lot of times we were managing issues that worked their way up through a structure or were covered significantly in the news media. And either way, we were coming in on the back end.
Yeah.
And it was very difficult to be on the front and really have the time to, you know, be thoughtful in concept and then, you know, be meaningful in our solutions. And instead it was Band-Aids, Band-Aids, Band-Aids all the time. And it was an hour and a half talking about note cards and how many different shades of, you know, in our current situation, green and white, could we put on the note cards? And, you know, that's okay because somebody asked the question, but it does not put you in a position to be able to really lead as an organization in times like these. And there also was no real escape mechanism or mechanism to say, hold on, we are so far down this road and it's going to be scary, but we're really heading in the wrong direction. So we need to pull back and reset. Once things get moving through the governance cycle, they kind of barrel along through committees and through a structure to the bitter end. And different battles happen along the way at each stage. And a lot of times it's about politics and agenda in that representational form of government, as opposed to, you know, workable solutions that then we can maybe come back to as the world changes around us and we need to adjust. So that's not to be critical of any one person. It's really more a critique of the system and the way that we have grown and changed, and the diversification of Division One from you know, one side to the other. It's very difficult to pull together people who represent such a variety of sizes of institution, of commitment of resources to their athletic programs, frankly, of the constituencies that they serve, and find commonality in a, you know, in a rule book. So a lot of the structure is set up to force us to do that, keeping in mind the championship structure, you know, operates a little bit differently. And I think if this, you know, committee that's taking a look at the purpose and function of the NCAA as a whole could, you know, address that, then they would give us an opportunity to stay together in some form of organization in a, you know, a greater good effort. But we've got to be responsive to the fact that our issues here at Ohio are different than the issues we had at Arkansas, which were different than the issues we had at Indiana, which are different than the issues that they had up the road at, you know, say Butler in at Big East University. And there's got to be room in the system for that. And if there's not, then it's going to be very hard to hold this together.
Well, it's that very subject that I was actually going to ask you about next. So let me ask a follow-up question here based on what you said over the last few minutes. The diversity is part of the NCAA. It's always been a part of the NCAA. And as you've noted, every institution is different. The constituent groups within the universities are different. The desires, the hopes, the goals of each university vary from campus to campus. And so the committee, the group studying this, and I know ADs and others from across the country are weighing in terms of their concerns, their thoughts, or whatever related to the next step. Is the group so diverse? I say the group. Is the NCAA so diverse, and thus the group studying this is so diverse? Can goodness, good work come out of this in a way that can be pointed and impactful? Or is this going to be a continuation of some bureaucratic effort where there's some progress made, but maybe not the progress that we all seek to be made to assure the future of this model as it was established to be, you know, however many years ago now?
I think the individuals named to that committee are smart. They're experienced. Many of them have at various times in their careers stopped at different types of institutions or organizations along the way. And I trust them to tap into that experience and do the best they can. I think the timeline is what's more concerning to me. And maybe even the setup, it does seem like It's, you know, we swing for the fences, or there are people who are prepared to declare it failure if it falls short of probably some unrealistic expectations. But I do think that there are smart, committed people in that room who have some good thoughts, who are reaching out to those of us in the membership to try to get some feedback, again, on a very short timeline, and who will come forward with some good concepts for us to respond to. I don't know that any one group would be able to solve all the issues that are being thrown at the feet of that group right now, and maybe, you know, some clarity and specificity as to you know, what their goals and intentions are on the front end earlier on might have helped to control that a little bit. But it's also unfair to expect a panel of people to solve all of our problems. We have to do that for ourselves as well. So I like others, am looking forward to their ideas and concepts and the report they issue. And then, you know, we'll move forward from there. I do anticipate, and this is just one person's opinion, Mike, I have no insight to that, but it does seem like incrementalism is our specialty under this form of governance. And so I think we should be prepared to see some of that. But there are key questions that I think have to be resolved among power brokers who have to have relationships that allow them to resolve them. Yeah, and my hope for the future structure of college athletics is that, you know, we can pull those power brokers together in a way that there is a greater good conversation.
Yeah. I'm going to use that as a segue to talk about realignment for a minute, if we can, because there are some that feel like there are a number of reasons why you could speculate on the current move to realignment in the industry this summer and even early fall. One of those speculative items is, hey, there's disarray at the highest level in NCAA, and so everybody's grabbing their boat and jumping in the water where they feel like they've got the best opportunity to survive. That's probably an extremist statement, by the way, but I believe that that is one statement that exists out there. As folks make their moves, schools make their moves to different places, one of the things that you and I have talked about offline is there's still a critical importance to the Group of Five and where the Group of Five sits in all this and the future of the Group of Five. And I know you sit in a very unique place now as an athletic director at a university that has had success and a conference that's had success, led by one of the really great commissioners in John Steinbrecher. I just really like your perspective on where do you and universities like Ohio sit when we start talking about the realignment work that's being done now.
Well, I appreciate that question, because I think particularly in the 2 years I've been at Ohio now, it's become very clear to me that, you know, the value of the Group of Five experience is true. It is the essence of what we hope college sports to be. And, you know, I don't get a lot of pressure at this level to necessarily emulate everything that our neighbors to the north in Columbus are doing, because, you know, we're fortunate enough to be pretty solid in our identity and understand who we are and where we fit within the ecosystem of college sports. And we're proud of it. So I get a little bit bothered sometimes in this zero sum conversation, this all or nothing conversation about, you know, whether or not schools are on a side of a line or not. I think there's obviously, if you look at my background, Mike, you know, there's a great experience to be had at the Power Five level. There's also an equally great experience, different, but equally great experience to be had at the Group of Five level and, you know, in other parts really throughout the NCAA. So I like to stand proud in that identity. You know, this is the right space for us as a university based on the history and the commitment that you've alluded to. We're in a great conference for us. And, you know, it makes a lot of sense with a lot of strengths geographically and also, you know, committed to being an FBS conference and being within that ecosystem of college football, even if not necessarily in the same corner or neighborhood as some of the other institutions that I've been blessed to serve in the past. And I do think that among the Group of Five, there are efficiencies that we can work toward. I do think that, you know, regional rivalries and regional competition makes a lot of sense to our fans and to our alumni and supporters. I think I hear that from my Group of Five colleagues as well. And so you'll see a lot of us in our own way lean into those strengths of, you know, our part of the world and really embrace it. And, you know, for other schools who are in a different, on a different path, that's great too. That's okay too. But those of us who are confident in this identity, I think really have a good story to tell, and we need to do a better job of talking about that.
No doubt. No doubt. It's the model in the truest sense from what we've known NCAA athletics to be for a long time, right? So, so you became athletic director about what, 2 years ago now, if I recall correctly, at Ohio. And I'm sure, knowing Julie Cromer, that you had a plan, and you were intent on your plan and how you're going to lead and what you're going to do. And then just a few short months after you get there, you know, a pandemic hits, you know, probably the most noted event in my and your lifetime in terms of just rocking the boat, right? So what have you learned about how to adapt and become a leader in the middle of crisis? There's silver linings every time there's a crisis, right? We know that. And certainly there have been a lot of hard, but based upon where you thought you were going to lead, how you were going to lead when you got the job, and then how you had to pivot into the pandemic and living through that in the last 18 months, what have you learned about yourself during that time? And what have you learned about leadership during that time?
Well, we could do a pod just on that alone, right? I've learned about myself, maybe, that I really can be a little bit more flexible and adaptable than I might have been pre-pandemic. When you have to be and have no choice, you learn that you do have greater capacity in those ways than before. I also, in some ways, I'll be honest with you, you know, learned that the bandwidth I was carrying before was enough in some ways and was not enough in a time of crisis. And so because the pandemic has continued over this period of time, I think, you know, it has really taken hold, I think, in some of the ways that we lead, and it will not be just an episodic event. It will, I think, in many ways linger now for months and maybe years to come. We were here with everybody else, I think, at least, you know, in this country. We were here in April of 2020 thinking that we would be back in the summer. And then in the summer, we thought we'd be back in the fall. And in the fall, we thought surely by basketball season. And it, you know, it just lingered on. And so now on the back end of that part of dealing with the pandemic, I think, you know, it's recognizing that others also had their bandwidth challenged and their ability to adapt challenged. And I'm really proud of the way our staff rose to the occasion. But I also have to recognize that they're still recovering many ways from that, you know, energy that they had to put toward just getting through the last year and a half, whether it was necessarily from a work perspective. We were primarily virtual here at Ohio and through half the summer. So, you know, we've really only been back on the ground here for about 2 months with things fully open and moving through campus as we normally would. Sometimes it was, you know, families working from home with, you know, kids underfoot and worrying about what was going on in their schools. Sometimes it was, you know, more health related, but everybody experienced this in some way. And now, being a more empathetic leader on the back end, initially it was about addressing something we didn't know much about, helping our staff understand we'll get through this, we can be adaptable, realizing that by continuing to say just a few more months, just a few more months, just a few more months, we actually were burning double time some of our energy, you know, and now trying to get everyone back in and running on more than just fumes. That's been, I think, the more recent challenge of leadership. That said, we've hosted football in an open stadium the last 2 weeks here, and it has absolutely been an uplift, the same uplift that our fans and others are feeling in, you know, getting out and about and moving more freely. And in our case, the game results weren't what we wanted, but to see our community come back alive and to have, you know, tens of thousands of people come to a small town like Athens and experience two really great football game days have big shot in the arm for us. And so we're going to continue to try to take that momentum forward. It's going to take us a couple or three budget cycles, Mike, to completely recover from the last year. Like a lot of other schools, we've come back in a lot of ways, but, you know, our university and the surrounding community will have to work its way back. And so, you know, for us, we're just at a new stage of the pandemic. You're right. It's not in the how to be an AD, how to transition from deputy to AD. You know, it, you don't cover that in the workshops, and it's not in, in the manuals. But like everyone, you know, we buckled up and we just kind of started running into the wind. And I think we're in a good position now, but continuing to work our way through it.
Did you find yourself having to, I mean, mental health is a critical subject to me, and to young, dealing with young people in particular. And I'm sure you have some commitment to that as a general rule at your university, but did you find that you had to commit additional resources during this time for those particular kinds of questions for your student athletes, coaches, staff?
Well, yes, particularly for our student athletes, and our university has also for our coaches and staff. But, you know, we are not resourced to the level of other departments and universities. So we've talked a lot throughout the pandemic about the stages we're in and what our staff needs, and did, you know, a lot of what I would describe as sort of amateur mental health support, meaning, you know, not necessarily bringing on staff or making available additional people who have credentials and a background in that support, but just trying to be better leaders and more empathetic leaders within our own department. You know, we had open conversations with our coaches, not just about how their student athletes are doing and what they need, but also about themselves and about, you know, what they as head coaches and leaders of their units needed. And in a lot of ways, we leaned on each other. Not everybody is for that conversation, but I was surprised by the number of people in our department, both head coaches and administrators of various generational cohorts and backgrounds, who were willing from time to time to say, you know, this is a tough stretch right now. And, you know, so then we would just respond by saying, you know, let us know what you need, and we can work our way through this with a little bit of extra flexibility.
Empathy has been the critical word for me during this time, right, related to that subject. So, so a couple more questions, and then we'll wind it down here. If you listen to you speak, if you've read articles that you've been a part of, if you've heard you on a podcast, one theme that I've heard a lot about is evidence-based decision-making, right? And so you, I can't remember if it's, you've had four or five different head coach changes that you had to work your way through over the spring and summer. That's a lot in a short period of time for a university to go through. And I have no doubt that you were prepared for that. But what does this concept of evidence-based decisions have to do? How do you apply that to the hires that you've had to make over the spring and the summer? I'm interested to hear your perspective on that.
That's a great question. I do try to be an evidence-based decision maker and less of an emotionally charged decision maker, although I recognize that, you know, both can work in a given setting. So it just happens to be what I'm more predisposed to. I do a lot of background and research. I use a coaching opening as an opportunity, not simply to find another individual who could come lead our program, but also to really examine our program and talk to people and find out what the external perceptions around our program may be. And, you know, I'm the type of person who may, you know, call and use my network to connect two or three layers and links down the chain to have a conversation about somebody who worked with somebody, not even as a head coach, but 10 years before as an assistant coach. We do use data as well. You know, we pull data about team results and depending on the coach and the sport and, you know, the emphasis we're looking for that would match well with our program, we might weigh, you know, some data more than others. But I think you cannot be paralyzed by your analysis, but you have to understand that particularly if you happen to be searching for five head coaches at, you know, in a tight window of time, which we were this summer, you know, the stress of that, the limitations on time, the sense of urgency that now sometimes comes around head coaching searches, the sport within the sport that has become, you know, trying to figure out who the lead candidates are and, you know, who they should be and people weighing in on that, you know, that can all take you off your game. And I think just going back to the evidence and going back to, you know, the information you can get to is a really good reset. And then at some point, you know, you things start to kind of fall into place and you make a decision and move forward. But we look at all that. And then here, you know, based on our resources, we also take a look at that as well. You know, this is different than I would say, you know, my previous two stops. We're looking for coaches who can be successful here with the resources that we believe we can put toward a program. And sometimes that shows up in their background and evidence as well. Success in one or two places can't always be replicated, you know, in a place like Ohio. So that, I think, is an additional layer, particularly here from a resource perspective, Mike, that comes at, you know, kind of a mid-major setting. When I was at Arkansas and at Indiana, you know, resources were a consideration, but it was much more about, can you handle the visibility and the external role in, you know, each of those settings that come with the SEC and in the Big Ten, the intensity of competition, you know, the intensity of the visibility, what kind of, you know, basically intestinal fortitude does this individual have to be able, you know, to survive in this environment and to thrive as he or she has in past settings. And, you know, it's a little different here. We want to win and, you know, it's competitive here. We're in a very, very competitive conference, but you have a little bit of time here to grow into coaching if you're doing things the right way and making continual progress. And this is particularly true for us in our Olympic sports. So we made a few hires this summer of younger coaches who I just thought had great potential, who showed evidence of being of growing into great leaders. And, you know, we're going to give them the support and help them grow into those positions in a way that a place like Ohio, you know, can. And we can embrace folks like that who are ready for the chair.
No doubt. Well, you know, the evidence-based decision-making, I think, when I think about it in the context of what you just said, you know, there's so much noise in the marketplace when you're doing a coach search, right? And so many different constituent groups who want to have a voice and feel like they should have a voice and in many cases do have a voice. And how do you filter that down? And so the ability to sort of drill down with some specific black and white information, and there'll still always be that sort of that guttural instinct, right, of sitting in the room with someone and visiting with them face to face and saying, does this person have it? But I do think that it certainly has had to have been helpful in your process. So, hey, let's finish up with a couple of just fun questions. I like to do this at the end for folks to get to know you personally a little bit. So, you know, having listened to you, knowing you, yeah, my question would be, how do you relax? Because obviously you've got a pretty high level of energy, and I know you're committed to your work, but how do you find balance or pull back just a little bit to relax from time to time?
Well, exercise is the best medicine, I think, just for stress management and for maybe taking off the edge. I can be an intense person. I can, you know, have a sense of urgency, and over the years have developed a threshold for work that I think at times it's fine for some people, and, you know, for others is maybe a little harder to deal with. So I try to be sure to be committed to that. And particularly, I would say, living in an area like we do here in Ohio, for those of you who haven't been to Southeast Ohio, it's beautiful here. Mike, we've got to get you to campus. There are trails in all directions, and it's gorgeous landscape. So I get out and hike and walk. You know, I'm not as much of a runner anymore as I used to be when I was younger. The knees can't quite take it in the same way, but I get out and get outside, you know, and do that as much as I can. And, you know, I also would just say, especially if I have days like today where I'm, you know, jammed up hour after hour, hour after hour, I will try to find a way to get out to practice, even if I have to take a meeting, you know, with me. Somebody who is showing up my office thinking that they're going to maybe deliver a PowerPoint deck or whatever it is, you know, we'll get up and walk and head out and be around our student athletes and coaches. And in a lot of ways, if I need a quick reset, that's the best one.
That's great. So during the pandemic, a lot of folks binge watched different series, you know, on Netflix or Apple, whatever. Do you have a series that you did a binge watching on, or one that you've sort of earmarked that you might at some point?
You know, I missed a lot of what everyone else was binge watching, but I did get into Billions. Have you seen? So that's a little bit, it's been around for a few years, but I think I went through like four seasons of Billions. And that was probably my binge watch. That was probably my only consistent binge during the pandemic. I tried to read a little bit more and get outside, but I don't know, it felt like we were on Zoom and Teams all the time. So if I binged anything, it was virtual meetings.
Yeah. So I recommend Ted Lasso. I'm sure you've heard a million people suggest that to you, but it just so many, well, first of all, it's lighthearted, but it has so many applications to athletics. And so when you get a chance, you need to catch some episodes and just go back to season one and start in it and just bear with it. After you get into a couple of episodes, you're going to really be hooked. So as an athletic director, I think you'll appreciate the recommendation there.
I will take that. I've seen part of a couple of episodes of Ted Lasso. And I will, it's in my watch next list, I think on Apple TV. Yeah. Watch next.
So who are your go-to mentors? When you have a hard question and you say, you know, this is what this person taught me, or maybe even it's that you still pick up the phone and call, who are your go-to folks that you've learned from, or that you still stay in touch with? And when you get into a hard place on decision-making,
I'll tell you the most recent one that comes to mind. This summer we had a football coaching change that was out of cycle and a little bit of a surprise, and we were retiring a long-serving head coach in Frank Solich, who had been here for 16 years. And so as that was developing, I reached out to Joe Castiglione. He had been through a successful transition few years back at Oklahoma. He's been a wise mentor and counselor and advisor for a number of years, has become a true friend. And so, you know, there weren't initially, as I was becoming aware of what that situation was with Frank, there were not a lot of people that you can let into, you know, that tight of a circle. But I did call Joe, and he was, as he always is, you know, was a invaluable resource to me. You know, I've been really fortunate going all the way back to that NCAA experience, Mike. You know, one of the greatest things for me about working at the national office was the network and the people who come through. And so I tend to, you know, rely on that quite a bit, and it's kind of episodic or topical. So depending on what's coming up, you know, I'll think about, you know, who's been through this before, who can I reach out to? And here in my transition more recently, I've really tried to connect more so with the ADs in my league and some other group of five folks, because I am newer to this environment than I had been to others previously. And so, you know, there are a good group of ADs here in the MAC that, you know, that I'll pick up the phone and talk to fairly frequently. And I think that also, by the way, was a byproduct of the pandemic, just our frequency of interaction with our conference peers. We had no other choice. And in a lot of ways, I think that accelerated the relationships in our league.
Yeah. Well, I'm not surprised to hear you say Joe. He's been a mentor and friend of so many in the industry for so many years, right? And I'll tell you, one of the things that I found helpful during my time is each summer we got together, I don't know, four, five, six, seven of us athletic directors each summer, and we went away for a couple of days and sort of locked the door and just sort of talked about issues. And we agreed to lay down our conference affiliations and any maybe competitive streaks that we had in us related to another person in the room or whatever, and talk real time, because these are unique jobs. There are only 130 of them in the FBS. And so finding that group of folks that you can develop a circle of trust as you continue to work your way through your tenure at Ohio and future opportunities, I think that'll be important for you. And I know you know that, but I just encourage you in that front. So, hey, last question. You mentioned this summer hiking, walking, whatever, and trying to read. So do you have a book that you want to recommend that you picked up over the summer?
The book that actually I'm about to start now is The Club. So, you know, this is the story of the English Premier League that a lot of other people have read, and it had been recommended to me so many times. Actually, I think it came out maybe in 2018 or 19, pre-pandemic. And I, you know, heard about it then from my brother, who's a, you know, fanatic Premier League fan, and, you know, some others not even in the sports industry. And so I kind of put it on my running list on my phone. And then it, you know, moved up a couple of spots. And then, you know, this summer it's become kind of a hot topic for all the obvious reasons that we talked about earlier with the realignment conversations. So that is next up on my nightstand. I just actually started it a little bit this weekend, and I'm looking forward to that one.
You're going to enjoy it. In the first 100 pages or so, you're going to go, oh my gosh, what am I reading here? And you're going to you're gonna see some application really quickly. Or you could extrapolate it. Let's just say that. So,
I didn't get quite 100 pages in this, but I was exhausted at the end of it. Yeah. I had to put it down. Yeah. I actually put it down and went for a walk. So I'm looking forward to that one.
Yeah. Well, you're going to enjoy it. It's a good book to be certain. So you've been very gracious with your time and I appreciate it so much. And I really appreciate you coming on and know that anytime we can be helpful in my role or personally, we want to try to do that. And we appreciate your friendship. And so thanks for joining us today.
Mike, thank you. Thanks for the opportunity and for your time as well. And for all you're doing for us and others in the industry. And I'm a fan of the pod, so I'll be looking forward to your future episodes as well. I know you'll have some great guests. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thanks so much, Julie. You've been listening to From the Chair. This has been Julie Cromer, Athletic Director at Ohio University. And I'm Mike Hamilton, your host. We'll see you next time.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig, inspiring kid confidence.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.